Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast here on the Nerd Party Network, the greatest, well, it's one of the best networks ever. Wouldn't you say so, John?
I would absolutely agree with that, Matt. It's the Nerd Party Network is the home to so many wonderful shows. People definitely need to check them out. If you enjoy Yes. Aggressive Negotiations, you'll enjoy all of the offerings that we have.
Yeah, I think so too. And we've got, the reason I say that is we've just grown by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
And actually, we'll be growing in the new year. So, wink, wink, hint, hint. There's something
hint.
Else coming for
something
you.
Something coming down the pike,
brand
y'all.
New year. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I can't tease too much because I don't want to get into that. But, John, I was thinking about this. We may shake things up today before I even ask you the question. You're prolific on the internet, and where can people find you if they want to, like, maybe catch up with you about some Star Wars stuff or see what maybe you're writing on your blog or doing elsewhere on podcasts?
My blog seems to have gone into a hibernative state again recently. So just look for Kessel Junkie roaming out there in the wilds of the internet. You can also find me actually co-hosting right here on the Nerd Party Network, Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, exploring the works of Star Wars creators. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And you can find me co-hosting Stage 9, also with Mike Schindler, which is basically looking at the works of Star Trek creators over on the Trek FM network. And Matt, we would be remiss if we didn't find out where you are online.
Oh, man. We hate being remiss.
We
so
do.
You can find me on the Trek FM network over there doing The Orb with Chris Jones. I'll also be doing Literary Treks for just a couple more weeks with Dan and Bruce talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek, also interviewing the authors. Of course, doing the 602 Club over there, which is so much fun. It's the general geek show. We have been having a blast this year doing so many different things. I mean, we've been talking through the old Bond movies. I mean, gosh, old, new, in between, everything that you can imagine in the geek universe. Check it out. And of course, Star Wars, the 602 Club collection is also there on iTunes. So if you just like Star Wars episodes, it's all in one place.
Sort of the godfather of this show. You can see where
right.
it all began.
It actually is the godfather of this show.
Yeah.
And those are the places you can find me. But I just thought we'd, do things different. Because you know what? That's what we do on Aggressive Negotiations.
You never know where we're going to come at you. You know?
It's just what's really interesting too, John, is that what we're going to talk about today, did you notice that Obi-Wan Kenobi talked about him and Anakin having aggressive discussions? So this year, John, I thought it would be kind of fun if we dove into some comics that have come out from Marvel, and we'll probably do that from time to time on the show, just pick up, especially the shorter runs that they've done.
Yeah.
Those tend to be the best. And we're big fans of Anakin and Obi-Wan on the show.
Indeed.
Here, especially in the prequel era. And this is the first time, since the Dark Horse Darth Maul series,
yes.
they've dived into the prequel era.
Specifically, the era between The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, which is pretty much late.
Did you just say The Phantom Menace?
Well, oh, please. People react worse to Attack of the Clones, which I'll never understand.
Attack of the Clones!
I know. But the, that 10-year gap has just laid fallow for so long. They had one in the Legends line. They had the one with... Where they first attempted to explain what happened with the Death Star plans, with Tarkin's ascendancy and everything. What was the name of that one? Rogue Planet.
Oh, yes. Rogue Planet. And then they had... what's the other book that was the lead-in to Episode 2 where they are in Antion?
Oh, no. That one was The Gathering... The Approaching Storm or The Gathering Storm?
Approaching Storm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But,
Alan Dean Foster, right?
Yeah. That one doesn't count, though, in my book, no pun intended, because, this comic series takes place well before Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Whereas,
yes.
The lead in book, Approaching Storm, was like, basically just took all of the story ideas that Lucas had struck from the first draft of Attack of the Clones and said, let's make a book out of it. It's like, okay, sure, that's great.
Well, and if you really wanted anything in that era, the only thing that was truly done that spanned that era was, you know, you had Jedi Quest, which was all about Anakin and his training by Jude Watson.
Oh, that's right.
The young adult series. If you wanted that about Obi-Wan, then you would read Jedi Apprentice series, also by Jude Watson, which I have all of those books. So, she was prolific in explaining the backstories of these young Jedi and their training. But again, I think maybe they realized, wow, this is something we should dive into. So they gave us a 5-issue miniseries here called Obi-Wan and Anakin. And just first off the bat, John, I wanted to ask you, because I think the art is really striking, and I wondered for you how that worked throughout these issues.
You know, I'm an old school comic book fan, and so the modern art is very, I mean, we're all very descended from the Liefeld McFarlane era at this point. But what always jumps out at me about newer titles is the coloring. The colorist's job has just changed so much through the years. It's so much more precise, and you know, there's so many different gradients and shadings and stuff like that. I always marvel at that. I thought the art was good. I did. It's very good comic book art. It's not a style that attempts to be hyper realistic, but it's also not sort of the semi-abstract reductive that you can find in, you know, titles like the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale Batman books that they did.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know, where like detail is at a minimum and it's very much almost mm-hmm. like gesture drawing. This is right. The very detailed, very ornate comic book art that never looks 100%, you know, they're not going for photorealistic. But it's good. It's good artwork. I trust you had the same, did you have the same reaction or...
No, I actually did. I really like the characterization of Obi-Wan and Anakin. I think that's really good. I always enjoyed Obi-Wan in this time period. It's nice to see he's growing the beard in this, you know, comic, and his hair is starting to get longer. It's not quite the mullet of Attack of the Clones, which, God, that's still a great hairdo. Maybe we should talk about hairdos of Star Wars one show.
We will. We can. Like a good Absolutely.
Show. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so back to the comic. No, I think that the art is really striking, and it's very interesting choice as well, because we are going to get some very out of this world, and I mean that literally for Star Wars. It's just off the wall kind of bonkers look at a planet with some technology. I just honestly never thought I'd see steampunk Star Wars.
Yeah. It is steampunk. You're right. I hadn't used that adjective
with
to the, describe
yeah,
it before, but yeah, no,
the blimps basically. And it's very interesting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean that, you know, the ships look like giant boats, and that's interesting in and of itself.
Well, and it's a planet we've never heard of before. It's Carnalon 4.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something new. They can do whatever they want with it. And
I just want to dive right into it because we're mentioning the planet now. If there was anything I was going to knock the series on, it's the conflict that they use as the conceit to drive the story of Anakin and Obi-Wan together. I enjoy what they do with the conflict between Anakin and Obi-Wan, with the questions that Anakin is having. It feels like it should have been a smaller scale sort of book series, something like them stranded on a planet, almost like Lords of the Sith, you know, where they got to fight their way back or something like that.
Yeah.
This seemed so much like the conflict they get drawn into is just too elaborate that I didn't think that it resolved itself organically. Like, it felt like they got to, you know, like the fourth or fifth issue, and they were like, okay, we got to start wrapping this up now because we got to get everything closed. So, I mean, what did you think of the scope? I thought the scope was just a little bit too much.
It is very big. And I think that this comic is of two minds. It's of the personal story between Obi-Wan, Anakin, and the Emperor. Well, it's not the Emperor yet, it's Chancellor Palpatine.
Yeah, we know what you mean.
Yeah, and it's all the same at this point anyway. They just didn't realize it yet.
Yeah, true.
And then there's this other story that's happening, which is fascinating. It does thematically kind of play a little bit with what's happening with Anakin and the choices he's trying to make. But I do think that it feels resolved quickly and in a way that it's taking a back seat to what's happening in the personal side, which it should, mm-hmm. but it feels so big that it feels like it shouldn't. So there's that,
right?
There's this both and happening with that question, and that's the frustration with it. Now, I'll be honest, it doesn't ruin what I think this comic does with the personal character stories, which is the best part of this comic. It's yeah. really good that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other stuff, and part of that too, John, I think the scope you're talking about, the outlandishness of it, of the kind of steampunk nature, all of these different creatures that come, you know, like huge dragons and
sure.
like Night of the Living Dead almost looking like characters and things just coming out of the woodwork to get them and all of that kind of stuff as well. Sometimes I feel like the comic artists are like, well, we just have to throw everything crazy possible because we can, because it's art.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd blame the writer even more than the artist. The artist, you know, like it's that relationship in, you know, it is almost like a film where it's like a director can come on and be like, I want this. And the crew could even say, I'm not nuts about that idea. Well, that's what I yeah. want. And so the crew just tries to make it happen. And again, see, the thing is, I agree with you. It's a good series. It's worth reading. The insights into Obi-Wan and Anakin's characters, the fleshing out a little bit of Palpatine's growing influence with Anakin, make it all worthwhile. These criticisms that we have of it are, you know, like minor in the sense that I almost feel like they should have taken two more issues to tell the story. I would have preferred to see it take a little bit longer, because then I think they could have found an easier way to contextualize the personal story within the, you know, the bigger, the grander mm-hmm. story.
Yeah. Which is nice to be able to say, in the sense that a lot of times you'll get a comic book series that, and John, I don't know if you know this, but comics are really a perpetual second act.
I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah. And so what's happening here is we actually don't get that. This is not a perpetual second act. They actually yeah. wrap it up. And I think what makes that interesting, what you're saying of wanting more issues, so many times you're like, oh, this is just a filler issue.
Right.
That doesn't happen here, and that's great. But I think you're absolutely right in calling out that even just one more issue, 22 more pages would have been fantastic for this story, just to give us a little bit more breathing room, especially mm-hmm. as both of the sides here in the conflict on this planet come together for the first time. You know,
yeah.
Obi-Wan makes the call very quickly and everything gets resolved there. And it kind of feels almost like a bow. But I will argue that at the same time, the resolution of that is not as important as the resolution of what happens with the characters between Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And the decision that
yeah.
Anakin makes to stay in the order, you know, that's really the crux of what's being pushed here.
Yeah.
But I agree, you know, like you give us this huge momentous story, we also want to see that resolved as thoroughly as you're resolving the other personal story.
You know, in a sense, you could almost say that the character of this reflects what some people don't like about the prequel films themselves, which is that the scope was so grand that a lot of people felt that the story, that the personal things were taking place within, was so large that they couldn't find a hook. Now, obviously, you and I disagree with that about the prequels, because a lot like this, you know, that the personal story is what it's about. The stuff that fans were looking for with the, you know, the establishment of the rebellion and big land battles and everything, that didn't really have to do with the, you know, the story that was being actually told. But to that end, do you think that this could have benefited from something that didn't feature a whole new conflict we'd never seen where, I mean, let's be honest, I think we can all take it for granted that the two sides are going to find out that they're not communicating equally and they've been blah, blah, blah. They've been played against each other. That's sort of a story that we've seen played out through time. So would it have been better to couch it in a story that would have played more into the growing, militarization of the separatists or something like that? Something to speak to that, that ties into that movie story so that this feels, if they're telling something that's, you know, too expansive for the number of issues that they have, at least we can sort of mentally contextualize it as, well, this is playing into giving us the world building over those 10 years that's going to pay off in Attack of the Clones.
I honestly think that they wanted something that kind of felt throwaway.
Okay.
Because they wanted the personal stuff to take precedence. And so they wanted what was happening in the background to be interesting enough to keep you going and to figure out what happens in that story. But that's the B plot. You know, it's like a Star Trek episode where that's definitely the B plot. The A plot here is the Anakin and Obi-Wan story about what's happening between those two and the influence, like you said, of Palpatine on that. And even, I think, the A plot involves a whole other section, which is just the function of the Jedi, which, you know, Anakin is really questioning. And I thought this was really interesting because they really dive into this in the comic, John, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this idea, you know, the system that the Jedi are under, and that you get a very clear picture here, especially in issue one on page 7, just to be specific, if anybody's wondering, that this system they talk about seems to be very, you know, broken, because Anakin's like, why didn't the Republic come and stop the war on this planet? And why would the Republic allow that? And he said, this world's not a part of the Republic, and there's nothing the Senate needed. And so they didn't intervene. And, well, why couldn't the Jedi stop it? Anakin says. And he says, well, the Jedi Order is under the jurisdiction of the Senate. The same was true when this planet was destroyed. So even though the Jedi could have done something, they really couldn't, because they're under this jurisdiction of the Senate.
Yeah.
And we can already see at this point that the Senate is all about this greed that's growing, and that's something they'll dive into. And you can really see where the Jedi have gone wrong in putting themselves under the jurisdiction of something other than the Force.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. I guess you're right then that it does make more sense to have it be. I mean, you know, if it illustrates the point, I guess it's just that, you know, when they introduced, and I can't think of the character's name right now, but the one that's like playing both sides that goes in to, the secret hideout they help her get into. But you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe if they just left it as just the conflict and maybe even separated out Anakin and Obi-Wan from it a little bit more so that it was more like a detached commentary instead of them being actually involved until the very end.
Well, and there's this interesting thing because the factions here are called the Open and the Close, and they've been fighting this war for generations.
Yeah.
And honestly, nobody really knows why they're fighting it anymore. They just keep blaming each other for things that happened centuries ago at this point. And there is a person called the Scavenger who has been collecting things from all over the planet and putting them in this huge bunker.
Yeah.
And it's collecting all the things that were valuable and beautiful and artistic and wonderful about this world once upon a time. And she sends them into the sky, so hopefully people will catch them every once in a while and be reminded that this isn't all that life is.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because what's happening here on the planet here is kind of a microcosm of the macrocosm that's happening with the galaxy, and especially the Jedi, who are forgetting that life isn't just being about bound to the Senate. It's about being bound to the Force and everything that's beautiful and alive. And
well, you know,
that's what they've forgotten. And so, I hear what you're saying, but I think that the more I think about it, the more I actually think the symbolism works enough.
Well, I mean, you know, thematically, you know, with the Open and the Close, like they're in a they're essentially in a system where they can't, you know, they're not breaking out because this is the way it's, you know, done, the way it's supposed to be done. And that could speak very much to, you know, the Jedi have fallen into the routine and they're not thinking about the system that they're in anymore. They're just doing, they're just there. Yeah, I mean, I guess I just think that it could have been, beating a dead point,
I get it though. I think you've got something really good. And the other thing that jumped out to me too is building on top of that whole idea with the Jedi. You know, when they go to the nightclub, Anakin is asked by Palpatine to accompany him on an errand that he needs to run, and it happens to be on the lower level. And this is where Palpatine's seduction of Anakin begins, of showing him the corruption of a system that doesn't seem to have an answer within the law. Because specifically, Anakin asks, well, why don't the Jedi fix this? Well, he's like, well, the Jedi are run by the Senate. They're controlled by the Senate. And so them coming after senators with it, you know, that doesn't really work. And I don't have the power to do that because I'm not a dictator and that's not what I want to be.
Right.
So, I mean, he's planting all of the seeds in Anakin's mind that the system is broken.
Right. And it needs someone wise to take over. You know, and it's interesting. I wrote something a really long time ago that was very sort of like snarky, tongue in cheek, but that as I've thought about it, makes more and more sense about the structure of the Star Wars galaxy and getting back to why the Jedi don't get involved and work with the Senate, blah, you know, all of that stuff. The strange thing is, you know, Lucas decided to refer to the separatists as the Confederacy of Independent Systems. But when you think about it, the Republic is essentially that already, right? Like and this is an example of that. Like there's Tatooine and there's this, and the Hutts control certain parts of space, and it's really everything is very conglomerated. But then you have Palpatine advocating, well, we can bring it all in and, you know, go with a central authoritarian government and, you know, take control and enforce the peace. And that, I mean, it's such an interesting musing, you know, when you come across conflicts like this, because you can understand why somebody like Anakin, who wants to do right, who wants to save people, who wants to help, would find that so seductive. You know, look around and saying, well, people can't manage themselves, so somebody's got to step in here and make sure that everything runs right. Yeah, you know, maybe that line could have been highlighted a little more. I don't know. But that's always the interesting thing. And that's something that I think is dealt with so subtly within the context of the larger Star Wars story that, you know, a lot of people, not through any fault of their own or any, you know, I'm not ragging on anybody for this, that, or the other thing. I'm just saying, like, it's so subtly done. You have to really work for it to get there. Like, I think that also has something to do with why, you know, people should go back and read this comic and then rewatch the prequels and sort of get what was being done with all of that.
Yeah, I definitely could not have said it better, because I think you're right on to something. And it's interesting that on top of what you're saying there, Anakin's shown to be a loner in the temple. And the other students kind of treat him differently because he was a slave. And they even make a comment that he'll always be a slave to his emotions or just a slave. And it's very interesting that's exactly what Anakin will become, is a slave to his emotions and a slave to Palpatine. When he says that somebody wise needs to come in and take over, it's almost as if he's saying, we just need a wise master to come in.
Well,
you know, he's never able to completely escape the life of slavery. And I think that's a very interesting thing about what he chooses to make himself a slave to. And in the end, he chooses to make himself a slave to somebody who he thinks is going to give him the most power to get him what he wants.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that ties in again, though, talking about the, you know, the kids at the temple. That ties in again, I think, to another thing that will always be a sticking point for a lot of you know, a lot of Star Wars watchers or fans is, you know, the Jedi Order, like, that, you know, it's not just arrogance. They're really a bunch of jerks, you know, when it boils down. You know, Anakin's the new kid in school and they're treating him, you know, it's almost like the anti-Harry Potter, where, you know, instead of being, you know, it's like the entire Jedi Temple is Slytherin, you know, and Anakin's Harry Potter, as opposed to having anybody on his, you know, on his side.
Now, that's an interesting statement, because I'll back up the Jedi here and say there were only two kids there. So, you know, that wasn't representative of every kid in the Jedi Temple. But I hear what you're saying, and it actually, the reason I think you can make that statement is because it's what Yoda will call out in Attack of the Clones. Arrogance is a more common trait in Jedi, even the older ones.
And you know,
so you're absolutely right that this is just another form of arrogance that we're seeing. And nobody comes in to correct these children or, right. You know, I mean, Anakin lashes out at them and points their, you know, grabs their sabers with the Force, points them at them and is like, what did you say? And then, you know, Obi-Wan has to stop him.
Yeah.
But nobody makes those kids realize that it's not just that they're being bullies or anything, but that is not the Jedi way to treat somebody with such disrespect. That is definitely not the Jedi way. And nobody is there to show them how that's wrong. And you can see how they turn out to be kind of arrogant little jerks.
Well, I think it also sets a nice stage as well for making it more understandable. I mean, you know, I think they do need to make as much of a point as possible, because Anakin's turn has been a problem for so many people, that stuff like this is very helpful, is continually presenting the evidence of the fact that, you know, well, why could Anakin snap and suddenly turn on everybody? And if you keep seeing examples of people being, you know, flat out jerks to him, you know, it doesn't excuse a single thing he does. But at the same time, you can look at it and say, well, you know, you poked the bear. You know, as it were. And that's why the bear didn't mind taking a swipe at you. You know, I don't know. I think I'm just stuck on the idea of the Jedi as Slytherin.
It's funny. Yeah. It actually is kind of funny and sad. I want to ask you something here. When we get to issue 5, and we talked a little bit about how it kind of wraps up very quickly, but Obi-Wan has called the Senate. Anakin has finally been able to fix a transmitter. He's called the Senate. They come in, and he's told them that there's a bunch of Tabana gas here. And Anakin asks him, is that true? He's like, I have no idea. That's not the point. The point was to get them here. It will be sometime before the Republic completes their survey. During that time, they will not be allowed to start the fighting again. And the people of this world may find peace to their liking, at least have a chance anyway, and perhaps they will help themselves. And then Anakin's like, but they just believed you. Like, you told them that there was Savannah Gas here, and they just believed you? And I love what he says. He says, yes, but the Republic did not come here because of Obi-Wan Kenobi. They came here because a Jedi called. Being a Jedi is not about just power or lightsabers, even the skill of the Force. It's about connection, being part of something bigger. I am stronger as a part of the Jedi Order than I could ever be alone. And I think what I love about that Obi-Wan speech is that it encapsulates Obi-Wan's fervent belief in the Jedi Order and what they are supposed to be, even if we've been shown they're not quite that. But it is really beautiful that Obi-Wan actually has a sense of the calling, that what the Jedi are supposed to do, who they're supposed to be in the galaxy. And I think it reminds me of, you remember in Dark Disciple, where Obi-Wan has the great speech to the council about how and why they failed with Ventress, and just how it expositorially beautiful it is. This seemed like the same kind of speech to me.
It is. And I completely agree with you. But meanwhile, I'm, you know, Now that we're revisiting it, something that sticks with me again is there's no Army of the Republic by this point. So, you know, why would the fighting stop? What's the Republic going to do? use harsh language, to borrow a line from Aliens?
Well, they seem to have some sort of senatorial guards, have, you know, that kind of stuff. And there were other Jedi. Coyote Mundi was in the scene there as well, so he had come.
Yeah,
other Jedi. So
sure.
Okay, I think, you know, there's so much we could talk about here, but I wanted to ask you about Obi-Wan's revelation to Yoda at the end of what he will do if Anakin decides to leave the Order.
Exactly what he should do. And you can't help but wonder, you know, if Anakin had left and then Obi-Wan leaves with him, you know, like, how different are things? You know, is that that would be so interesting. I think personally they have enough storytelling breathing room to do that, to have them both leave for a time and come back. There's nothing that says that they can't. We know very specifically in Star Wars that if it's not specifically contradicted with a very specific set of words on screen, knock yourself out. Have fun.
And you know what I think is really interesting about that is the commitment that Obi-Wan has to his apprentice, I think, is above and beyond what we see in the Jedi. And I think Obi-Wan's connection and attachment to Anakin is a real benefit to Anakin there. I think that the frustration for Anakin becomes the fact that he decided to stay in the Order and still continues to chafe against the rules and his non-patience. And yeah, if he had decided to leave and him and Obi-Wan had gone their separate, you know, ways to get, you know, they go their separate ways from the Jedi Order, and he just continues to train him, I think it's very different because they're not butting up against any rules per the Jedi Order and the code there that would keep Anakin from being able to be a little bit more passionate, go back and see his mother, you know, maybe even get together with Padme and it be okay, be able to have all of those things without it being quote unquote the wrong thing to do. So I think they set up a really interesting, almost Elseworld story that could happen. You know, I think we might have another idea of what to write one day.
Yeah. You know, I think that on top of everything else, you know, I hope this series was successful enough that they feel free to come back and revisit things. The one thing that I would warn against with it is that it would be way too easy for it to suddenly feel like Anakin is stagnant during this time period, because they did so much character development with the Clone Wars. They have to find a way to inch Anakin along if they come back and they revisit things that doesn't undercut the development that we've seen happen on screen already. Especially if you're going to go with the presumption that absolutely every bit of material that they release at all times is official and blessed by the story group and is to be taken as having happened. You know, they got to watch that. I mean, it's
well,
tough.
And the wonderful thing here, the comic does set itself up because they get sent on another mission at the end.
Yeah.
And I think this really could be a successful series in the same way, you know, the Jedi Quest books were successful in, you know, Anakin's development at that time period. I would actually really like to see them do it again and continue to do like the 5 comic series, so they're not trying to stretch themselves too much and, you know, make this a never-ending series. You know, I don't want that, but I come up with a sufficient arc for 5 stories that's well-paced, it's well-plotted out, and like you said, it's taking into account that character development. And I think you've got something here, because I do think that this is a time period that, as we said at the very beginning, is just rife for exploring.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, man. It'd be really nice, because it's been frustrating for me for, you know, almost 20 years at this point, that there's a whole 10-year gap that has not been adequately explored. They've definitely got the room for it. But you know what I have the room for, Matt?
Probably a Loot Crate subscription,
John. You're darn right, Matt. I have room for a Loot Crate subscription at lootcrate.com/nerdparty, and you enter the code nerdparty at checkout, you will get a substantial reduction on your price for signing up for Loot Crate, which is a service that sends you a box of goodies once a month, different themes. The theme for the month of December is the Revolution, featuring all sorts of neat stuff from different, you know, sci-fi franchises, geek franchises that speak to the theme of Revolution. You never know what you're going to get. It's a little present delivered to you once a month. So go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty, and start enjoying today.
Or as we like to say here, join the revolution. Join Loot Crate.
Nice. Absolutely right. And you know what other movement they can join, Matt? They can join the movement to go on over to iTunes and give Aggressive Negotiations a review. If you like this show...
Yes, they should. In fact, John, mm-hmm. I think that's what we want for Christmas, isn't it?
It is what we want for Christmas. Because if you like this show, you probably tell friends about it. You probably say, hey, you know what? You like Star Wars. You should listen to Aggressive Negotiations. When you give a star rating and review on iTunes, that's just like walking into a room full of friends and saying, hey, guess what, guys? You should listen. And
While wearing an Aggressive Negotiations t-shirt, which we should get made someday.
Someday. Someday. Somewhere over the Tabana gas mine. And, you know, the thing is, though, participate. The more listeners we get, the more questions we might get. We've already fielded some listener questions and had some listener feedback. And you can reach out to us if you go to thenerdparty.com/contact. Click on Aggressive Negotiations. We'll get an email. You have a question? You want us to field it on air? Go ahead and fire it off. And where else can they find us, Matt?
They can find us on Twitter. We are at The Jedi Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the entire network is on Twitter, at Join Nerd Party.
Indeed.
And they can find us on Facebook, which is an amazing place to go. Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We've got every show there. We're talking about geek news and, of course, all the Star Wars stuff, the latest stuff. You know, it's so much fun. In fact, you know, I just want to plug our Twitter again, John, because I was scrolling through some tweets and James Arnold Taylor, wonderful voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in The Clone Wars, fantastic gentleman. He tweeted out his A Night Before Christmas, a Star Wars version that he did in the Anakin, in the Obi-Wan voice. So go find that in our tweets. That's the kind of stuff. We love to put out great Star Wars stuff from ourselves and from others around the galaxy.
And speaking of others around the galaxy, go ahead and check out nerdsandbeyond.com. Great source for nerd news. And you can get the latest. No preamble. They get to the point. It's a great read.
Well, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.